how for live life. Man, I will remember
how for rough things, mama.
Say I remember how for live my life. Say we remember
how for rough things, mama.
Say I remember how for live life. Man, I will remember
how for rough things, mama.
Say I remember how for live my life. Say we remember
how for rough things, mama.
Say I remember how for live life. Man, I will remember
how for rough things, mama.
Say I remember how for live my life. Talk about you, you go on the street and they call it if man. Say money not a pop, you school fee, you talk seven and they say you cook a son. Say we don't know how for run things, I don't know how for live life. Papa God, I ain't go sorry for mama. They we remember how for live life. Man, I we remember
how for run things, mama.
Say we remember how for live life. Man, I we remember
how for run things, mama.
Say I remember how for live my life. Say we remember
how for run things, mama.
Say I remember how for live life. Man, I we remember
how for run things, mama.
Say I remember how for live my life. Say we remember
how for run things, mama.
Say I remember how for live life. Man, I we remember
how for run things, mama.
Say I remember how for live my life.
Television, tell the better people about porn. Not bad thing, not bad disease. Where they bring this way during the racism. You find the people walk under the forget that even my mom and dad want me to do right. And I think I'll for make it when I feel the hunger. Where the flow like a beast, not enemy with mankind. What am I going to do to save my people from suffering? No education, just starvation. Not donation, not in the bring frustration. Not the sanction, the new generation. We get revolution, they fight for power. Forget the jump them and they kill the people, the children cry. No solution for protection, yet bad situation. Man, they talk about elections on the celebration. I make occasion for satisfy the people, not to corporation. Not corruption, let me ask a question. We consult, we know the cause. We drop the gun, no more fighting. Until the general not on the back, give me your face. Make you see face to face, no matter the poor. We know about justice, try for the injustice. Because I see truth, now you live on our party heart. If you the high dam, it left you and God, we call, we call, we all for the account for.
welcome to Solidarity Not Charity, the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee here on AhuraRadio.com. The music that you've been hearing is Carlos Santana performing live a song called Toussaint Louverture, who, of course, the leader of the Haitian Revolution against French colonialism, or a leader, a well-known leader of the Haitian Revolution against French colonialism. And that is very appropriate for today's program, where we're going to be talking about Haiti. And of course, as always on Solidarity Not Charity, we want to give thanks and appreciation and profound respect for the leadership of African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela and the leadership of the party in establishing an organization where white people could take a stand in solidarity with the African liberation and carry out our work to organize in the white community, to build support financially, politically, sincere solidarity from the white community in solidarity with African liberation and the anti-colonial struggle against U.S. imperialism around the world. So we want to welcome you to this week's edition of Solidarity Not Charity, where on today we're going to be talking about the situation in Haiti. And Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, is in the studio with me, Sandy Thompson, and we're going to be talking about Haiti. So we are going to take questions at the second half. We want to go ahead and get a bunch of information, to you first, because Chairwoman Hess has been doing a tremendous amount of research. In fact, here in St. Petersburg, we held an event on Thursday, just a forum meeting of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, where Chairwoman Hess presented a very dynamic and powerful slide presentation about the situation in Haiti that we hope to get up onto the website soon and share that with people. So today we're going to be talking about Haiti, and welcome to Solidarity Not Charity, Chairwoman Hess.
Uhuru, Sandy, and I want to say uhuru and welcome to everybody who's listening today. And I want to join in thanking the African People's Socialist Party for letting us from the African People's Solidarity Committee have this show on uhururadio.com every week. And I just want to thank Nubinga Zimbabwe for his excellent show right before this one, in which he talked quite a bit about Haiti. And we're going to be covering some of the same ground in terms of the history. But I think that that's important to do. And in fact, we were going to have a show that included the history and went all the way up into the current situation of the 7.0 earthquake that happened on January 12th. But I think we're going to be doing that in two parts. And today we're going to talk a lot about the history of Haiti. And then next week we'll really focus on the whole situation that's currently happening on the ground in Haiti today.
Great.
So just to start out by saying that, of course, as the African People's Solidarity Committee, we are the organization of white people that was formed by the African People's Socialist Party. Our organization was formed in 1976, and we work in the white communities under the leadership of the strategy of the party to organize other white people to take a stand in solidarity with the movement for African liberation, which unites African people all around the world to bring together Africa under the leadership of the African working class to control Africa's resources and to have an African revolution in which African people are in control of their own lives and self-determination. So, you know, I think that after the earthquake happened in Haiti, the 7.0 earthquake on January 12th, there was a tremendous outpouring of support and concern from people from all around the world. And I think that is really important. But as the African People's Socialist Party and Chairman Omali Yeshitela, under whose leadership we work, has pointed out, that the U.S. and all of this aid, even though only a few cents actually get to anybody, if that, on the ground there. All of that, the media, attention that's there right now will leave at a certain point, and Haiti will go back to the conditions that it already lived in, which was desperate poverty and colonial devastation for the last 200 and more years. And what really will change Haiti is the organization, the African Socialist International, and the organizing of African working class in unity with African people everywhere to have the slogan, touch one, touch all, and to overturn the conditions that exist for African people everywhere. So, we want to talk about the history of Haiti. I think that everybody should know the history of Haiti. The history of Haiti it's just an amazing, incredible history of resistance, of African revolution, just in an unbroken chain since the first African was brought there in the 17th century. And it's something that a lot of people know nothing about, but it's a powerful, powerful history. So we want to go over some of that. And we want to talk about why it is that a 7.0 earthquake in Haiti would kill at least 150,000 people. And then I think they're saying much more than that. I think they're not even counting, actually. They're just throwing people in mass graves and leave millions of people homeless. While the 1989, I think it was called the Loma Prieta earthquake that I was in Oakland, California, killed 63 people. And we want to talk about what created these conditions far more than an earthquake fault under Haiti, but the conditions of colonialism that African people in Haiti have been living under. So I want to start with the fact that Haiti was the home to the Taino people. Some people also call them the Arawak, but as far as I can see, I believe that they call themselves the Taino people, T-A-I-N-O. They lived in Haiti and in the Caribbean, the indigenous people there, for thousands of years. And they called the island Aiti, A-Y-I-T-I, and that meant the land of mountains. Christopher Columbus landed on the island of Aiti in 1492, where he was welcomed by the indigenous people, by the Taino, who fed and housed Columbus and his men. But Columbus' genocide began immediately with rape and with terror against the indigenous people. The Spanish had dogs that were trained to eviscerate, they were trained to rip out the intestines of the indigenous people. So here's one description by a priest, a Spanish colonial priest, Bernardo Las Casas, who lived in Haiti and in other parts of the Caribbean in the 17th century. He said, "The Spaniards began to rip open the bellies of men, women, children, and old folk, all of whom were seated off guard and frightened. They were watching the Spaniards. Within two credos, not a man of all of them remained alive. The Spaniards enter the large house nearby and with cuts and stabs begin to kill as many as they found there, so that a stream of blood was running as if a great number of cows had perished. To see the wounds which covered the bodies of the dead and dying was a spectacle of horror and dread." And, to just understand that it was a prosperous island, there were, I don't know how many, million or hundreds of thousands or millions of people that lived there, and certainly millions of Taino that lived in the Caribbean islands. And they welcomed Columbus and his troops in and helped feed them and house them. They had beautiful houses and farms and, you know, just a lot of fishing industry going on. And they, you know, immediately began to kill them. The Spaniards immediately began to kill the Taino people, and within 40 years, the Taino people were wiped out.
Incredible.
And many died.
Within 40 years. Mm-hmm. Within 40 years.
Within 40 years.
The entire population.
Like in the 60s, yeah. And they were, genocide was complete against them. And a lot of them died as well, just by the Spaniards breathing on them. And they caught smallpox and other diseases that the Spanish were carrying as well. But there was a tremendous amount of just slaughter and terror and unimaginable brutality being carried out. Columbus renamed Haiti Hispaniola, or Little Spain. In 1697, Spain ceded the western half of the island of Hispaniola to France. And France grew cotton, indigo, tobacco, and cocoa on huge plantations. They did this with the brutal theft of African people and the stolen labor of Africans enforced with torture and terror. African people in Haiti were worked to death under the most unimaginable conditions within 7 years. Here's a clip of a documentary on Haiti that we're just going to listen to for a couple of minutes here.
It's a force of almost 30,000.
Residents in one of Haiti's poorest neighborhoods are desperate. Survivors of Haiti's earthquake living in the slum area of Cite du Soleil, north of...
Towards the end of the 18th century, the colony of Saint-Domingue, today's Haiti, is the jewel of France. Incredibly, it alone provides two-thirds of France's foreign trade.
Haiti was the richest colony in the world, bar none. No other area produced the income per square mile that Haiti did in 1790. Sugarcane, sugar production is a biggie, but sugar production in Haiti, as it was elsewhere, is a plantation crop requiring large labor inputs.
They imported African slaves and worked them to death and then just sent for more, to the tune of something like 50,000 a year.
Of all the slave societies in the history of the world, this was quite possibly the worst. They were horrible places, using incredibly brutal labor, incredibly brutal repression.
In 1791, Saint-Domingue's slaves mount a fierce rebellion against French control, inspired, ironically, by the French Revolution. The uprising rivals even France's in sheer carnage.
The Haitian rebellion was an incredibly, horribly violent thing, as one would expect after the sort of treatment that the slaves had received.
During the rebellion, an extraordinary leader emerges. Toussaint Louverture, a former slave, who is proclaimed the Black Napoleon.
Now, this did not go down very well with Napoleon, especially when he saw a painting of how Toussaint had dressed himself as Governor General.
In late 1801, Napoleon launches a force of almost 30,000 men, the largest France has ever sent overseas. The mission's leader, General Charles Leclerc. His orders, to crush Louverture, and then continue on to New Orleans.
Uhuru, that's just a clip that shows a little bit about the conditions leading up to the Haitian Revolution. And this is a description of the brutality that the French colonizers and slave owners subjected onto the African people. And it was written by an African man of that period. And he said, "Have they not hung up men with heads downward, drowned them in sacks, crucified them on planks, buried them alive, crushed them in mortars? Have they not forced them to eat excrement? And having flayed them with the lash, have they not cast them alive to be devoured by worms or into anthills, or lashed them to stakes in the swamps to be devoured by mosquitoes? Have they not thrown them into boiling cauldrons of cane syrup? Have they not put men and women inside barrels studded with spikes and rolled them down mountainsides into the abyss? Have they not consigned these miserable blacks to man-eating dogs until the latter, sated by human flesh, left the mangled victims to be finished off with bayonet and poignard? These were the conditions that Africans faced on the island of Haiti. So rebellions of African people grew up all over the islands almost immediately. Thousands of resistance fighters who were called the Maroons liberated territory in Haiti's mountains, making ongoing raids on plantations. So there was resistance from the beginning. And as it said in that piece, in 1791, inspired by the demands of that French Revolution, which was liberté, égalité, and fraternité, liberty, equality, and brotherhood, Africans launched the first rebellion of the Haitian Revolution. And, you know, just to make the point that in France, when workers and peasants were struggling and fighting in the French Revolution and fighting for liberty and equality, they refused to side with the peoples of the colonies of France. And they were very clear that they had no intention, if they won, if the workers won in France, that they were going to not free the colonized people in the French colonies. They were going to maintain those colonies. And I think that's a really clear example of what it means for parasitic capitalism, as the chairman talks about it, that the conditions of white workers sit on the pedestal of this brutality and violence and genocide against the indigenous and African people. Mm-hmm. So in 1798, formerly enslaved Toussaint Louverture led an African army that defeated the British, who were invading Haiti at that time. Now, Toussaint did not declare independence from France. He worked in a sense as a Frenchman in a certain way, but he did abolish the system of slavery and enslavement in Haiti. So now we're going to hear another clip from this same documentary.
Napoleon had anticipated victory in a matter of months. He was wrong.
The war in Haiti is the first example of guerrilla warfare in the history of modern warfare. For Haitians, it was the Armageddon. They had nothing to lose by going all out. Losing the war was losing their liberty, and they put their liberty above everything else. They poisoned food, they poisoned water, they fought behind trees, they fought from rocks, they ran away, they attacked at night, they attacked in small groups. They were enormously mobile, and the French at that time had never experienced anything quite like that. It was enormously bloody. The Haitian Revolution was, until that time, the most bloody war there was. Haiti was Napoleon's Vietnam.
The rebels of Saint-Domingue dragged the war on. 2 months into the campaign, as the rains set in, they stall the French, for the guerrillas have a secret weapon in this war. Napoleon's troops are vulnerable to yellow fever, unlike most locals who have developed immunity to the disease. The treatments available are few: elixirs of wine and bark, or bleeding the patient.
The soldiers just died like flies. Never more than here did a higher percentage of soldiers die of disease as opposed to being killed in combat.
In September of 1802, General Leclerc reports to Napoleon that of almost 30,000 men, only 4,000 are still able to fight. 2 months later, Leclerc dies as well. Meanwhile, Napoleon has rallied 20,000 fresh troops to invade New Orleans, Instead, he has to send most of them to Saint-Domingue as reinforcements. 3,000 remain at a port in Holland, still braced to take Louisiana. But a last fluke event seals the mission's fate.
Ice storms, and the ships were literally trapped in the harbor by ice. It would have been interesting to think of what might have happened had the ships been able to embark, had they actually gone to Louisiana. 3,000 French troops would have been a considerable force there.
Napoleon is barred from invading Louisiana not by American will or diplomatic finesse, but by ice, the mosquito, and an island rebellion that defied prediction.
Uhura. So just to say a little bit about what that clip left out, I want to go back a minute, because they're saying that the Africans fought a guerrilla warfare against the French, and I think, and they call it Napoleon's Vietnam, and I think it's interesting because in Vietnam, the French also got their asses kicked the people, by the Vietnamese people, in the same kind of guerrilla warfare. So they don't learn. The imperialists are always fighting the last 10 battles, and you know, it shows the power of the people, the power of the revolution that is based in the people. And when, there's a couple things here that I want to bring out, though, that when Napoleon sent the 30,000 troops into Haiti, they tricked Toussaint by calling him, offering him a negotiation on a ship, which he did, even though some of his forces were saying, don't do that. And they took him to France, so they just kidnapped him on that trip. Of course, it was no negotiation. They took him to France and put him in a brutal prison up in the mountains where he died of pneumonia. He was in freezing conditions, and you know, he died a very, very horrible kind of situation. And that after they did that, then Napoleon reinstated chattel slavery in the plantation system in Haiti. But what Napoleon did not understand was that all the African workers and former enslaved, the African working class was united. They would drive out the French and fight for their independence no matter what. And the real hero of the Haitian Revolution was Louverture's general, Jean-Jacques Dessalines. And it was he who, after Louverture was kidnapped, who led the guerrilla war to defeat Napoleon's troops. And it was Dessalines who always fought for and had the intention of complete independence as an African state from the very beginning. He wanted no negotiation, no relationship with France at all. So after Dessalines and the Africans of Haiti wiped out the 26,000 of Napoleon's original 30,000 troops, and there was only 4,000 left, as they talked about there, Napoleon sent in this Rochambeau, who was a vicious, brutal general, and you know, who brought reinforcements. And according to one history at the time, it said Rochambeau wrote to Napoleon that to reclaim Saint-Domingue, which was Haiti, France must declare, quote-unquote, the Negroes slaves and destroy at least 30,000 African men and women. In his desperation, Rochambeau burned alive, hanged, drowned, and tortured African prisoners, reviving such practices as burying blacks in piles of insects and boiling them in cauldrons of molasses. However, each act of brutality was repaid by Dessalines' forces. After one battle, Rochambeau buried 500 Africans alive. Dessalines responded by hanging 500 French prisoners. And just, you know, they fought like hell, and they defeated Rochambeau, which was unthinkable. You know, it's doubtful that the U.S. could have defeated Napoleon's army at that time. or any other force. And it was the African working class, armed and united and fighting for their liberation, that won. So in November of 1803, Dessalines and his African army defeated the French army. And on January 1st, 1804, the Africans declared independence. And it was the first successful workers' revolution, the first movement for national liberation, the first revolution of enslaved Africans that won a victory any place in the world.
Uhuru. Well, we just want to remind everyone that we are listening to Solidarity Not Charity. This is the weekly program of the African People Solidarity Committee. I'm Sandy Thompson, and here in the studio with me is African People Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess, who's talking about the situation in Haiti and some background to the current situation in Haiti, the history of Haiti, and it's really fascinating, and I hope that you are enjoying it as much as I am and learning as much as I am about it. We want to also just let you know about some important activities that are upcoming in the Uhuru movement, wherever you are located. And one is, immediately following this program, there's a new program on Uhuru Radio that is hosted by Norman Otis Richmond out of Toronto, who's incredible person in the music industry and I guess you could say music historian, just totally knowledgeable and involved in the history of African music throughout the world. And he's going to be doing a tribute to singer-songwriter Jesse Belvin at 2 o'clock immediately after this program. It's a new program that's going to air every other week, or it's going to be live every other week here on Uhuru Radio, so I want to encourage people to tune in for that. Also want to encourage people, if you have not purchased your 2010 historical calendar featuring the works and life of Chairman Omali Yeshitela and the Uhuru movement, you still can do that. You can get your 2010 calendar and go on burningspearmarketplace.com and place that order. Also want to let people know, if you are a designer, a graphic artist, the African People's Socialist Party has announced a design contest for the party's 5th Congress, for an identity package for the party's 5th Congress, including a logo, a poster, you know, various materials. And they're going to be selecting this upcoming week the winner of that contest. So if you're interested at all in contributing your design skills in crafting up a logo, you know, drafting some visuals for the promotional materials for the party's 5th Congress, go to uhurunews.com, and there's a link at the top of the page announcing the design contest. You can go there and get the specs, and definitely contact the party if you want to do that, if you're able to do that. Also, while we were just on the show at the beginning of the program, just this hour, we received in Uhuru Radio email an announcement from the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, particular to people in St. Pete in Florida, but I think of important information for everyone listening. And this is a message coming from Impedum President Chimaringa Waller. He says, "Uhuru comrades, I am calling on all Impedum members, contacts, Uhuru movement organizations, and allies to attend an urgent meeting on Thursday, February 4th, that's this upcoming Thursday, at 7 p.m. at the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, to discuss the Haiti situation and to report on work in progress and to enlist your participation in a very important upcoming events and work around Haiti. Some of you are aware of the recent successful conference of the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, which held its for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations, held in St. Petersburg January 23rd and 24th, which, by the way, was broadcast live on Uhuru News and can be viewed. So they're going to be doing a meeting, and it's also going to be discussing a national march and rally taking place in February 20th in Miami, National Haiti March and Rally, Saturday, February 20th. So these are some of the things upcoming, and we will return to our discussion. We will begin to take calls. Will we begin to take calls? Mm-hmm. At this point, if you do have comments or questions regarding the history of Haiti that we're covering this week, and then next week we'll get more into the current situation. But you can interact and participate in this discussion right now by calling in to using Skype and using your computer. You can call in to Skype ID Uhuru Radio. You can also phone in on your telephone and raise question or comment with Chairwoman Penny Hess during the next half hour. And that number is 727-565-1599. That's a U.S. number, 727-565-1599. So we want to return to our discussion of the history of the Haiti Revolution.
Uhuru, thank you for that. And I hope everybody will support the demonstration in solidarity with Africans in Haiti that's going to be coming up soon. Did it have a date on that?
Yes, February 20th.
February 20th in Miami. In Uhuru. And I know we'll be getting, uhururadio.com will be getting a lot more out about that. So some of the principles of Haiti's African Revolution were amazing. And I just wanted to state some of them because they were really beautiful. And the first one was that all citizens of Haiti shall be known as black. And that is really powerful. So although most white plantation owners were either expelled from Haiti or driven out of Haiti or else left Haiti because they would lose their land, there were some white people there. And of course, there were class divisions that the French and Spanish before them had set up that divided Africans based on mulatto, mestizo, these kind of divisions that they created. But there were actually some white people there from Poland that had come as refuge from oppression that was happening in their own country. And these Polish fought on the side of Toussaint Louverture and Jean-Jacques Dessalines and on African workers. So they were accepted as Africans. And so all divisions, class divisions, reflected in color divisions, I guess you would say, skin color divisions set up by colonialism and neocolonialism were gone, and every citizen was an African. And I think that's a really powerful and reflects a really deep understanding of the whole, you know, situation and reality of colonialism. It was also granted freedom of religion, which is interesting because even today, of course, there's the Catholic Church attempts to, as one, and there's millions, there's tons of missionaries that in Haiti and Africa, but the Catholic Church was an important power there and still is, that facilitates colonialism and neocolonialism. And the African spirituality is called voodoo and is very, demonized in the Western press and all. And that's, you know, that African culture. So that was allowed to you know, be what it needed to be or wanted to be. And no white person could own land in Haiti. So that was a really important thing. So it enabled the land to be held by the African working class. And anyone escaping oppression anywhere in the world would be accepted by Haiti. So that was, you know, from Mexico. Of course, Africans came from all over the world, but other people could come too. Indigenous and even white people escaping oppression were welcomed in Haiti. Some people, of course, the imperialist and colonial history calls Dessalines, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, who became the first leader, ruler of Haiti, independent Haiti. They called him autocratic. Yes, he was autocratic, but he was in the interest of African workers and peasants and the formerly enslaved. Almost all the white former plantation owners were driven out or forced to leave. But it was very clear that from the very start, the African Revolution was determined to preserve the leadership of the African working class. From 1824 to 1826, independent Haiti accepted 6,000 Africans escaping terror in the U.S. And I think that is really profound. That's a fact that almost no one knows, that they were given a little bit of land. They could come to Haiti and establish themselves there. In 1825, Haiti was forced by the U.S., Britain, and France to pay France 9 million gold francs. It started out as 150 million gold francs, and I think that it finally ended up as 90 million gold francs for stolen property, quote-unquote. That meant land stolen from the indigenous people to begin with by the French and Spanish, and it meant African people themselves. That
property.
They were property. Mm-hmm. And as enslaved Africans freeing themselves, they had to pay reparations for liberating themselves. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. forced this on Haiti through economic embargoes and every possible kind of terror and infiltration, the use of the so-called Monroe Doctrine and all kinds of things to force Haiti to do that. They would, you know, and created a boycott of Haiti's products around the world. Now, 90 million gold pieces of gold, ounces of gold, in today's gold prices at $1,000 an ounce would be $90 billion today. That's what Haiti had to pay. And the U.S. forced Haiti to make these payments from 1825 until 1947. Mm. So it was 122 years. African workers always resisted. The U.S. did everything it could under the Monroe Doctrine to undermine the independence of Haiti and to set up neocolonial puppets and groups that were, you know, struggling against the African workers all throughout this history. They did everything possible to undermine this independence of Haiti, of African workers in Haiti. And every time that there was some kind of power and, you know, oppressive group that would gain power in Haiti during the 19th century, Africans always rose up. African workers always rose up in constant rebellion against that. But in 1915, in the face of rebellions, just rebellions going on in Haiti against a certain sector that was gaining power and land and reinstating, you know, a very oppressive system, African workers were rising up, and the U.S. invaded Haiti in a very brutal occupation. It sent in the Marines, beginning in 1915, with absolutely no supervision whatsoever. So they just ran roughshod over the people. They killed the people's leaders. They instituted counterinsurgency against the African working class. They set up neocolonialism. They looted Haiti's treasury. And they rewrote Haiti's constitution, ending the prohibition on white land ownership. And it, you know, just to say that I read an article that was in USA Today saying that the Marines who are in Haiti now have been mandated to study the Marines' history from 1915 to 1935, which the Marines said was very excellent, and they want them to carry out the same kind of mission, and they're studying it to replicate that today. But the Marines were withdrawn in 1934 under Franklin Roosevelt due to, again, rebellions that were going on and just the resistance of the African workers. But the U.S. under Roosevelt maintained complete overt control over Haiti's treasury until 1947. When the so-called debt was paid to France. And Franklin Roosevelt was involved in this the whole way, because he was the Assistant Secretary of the Navy under Wilson in 1915 and engineered the occupation to begin with. And it was Roosevelt who withdrew in 1934 but kept control of Haiti's treasury.
The great FDR.
Yeah. So this is why Haiti is the most impoverished country in the Western Hemisphere.
Right.
According to an article that was in International Affairs in July 1970, it said the 20 years of occupation by the U.S. and the Marines, U.S. Marines, virtually turned Haiti into a U.S. colony. American monopolies disfigured Haiti's economy, consolidating feudal relations there. In the late 1940s, the U.S. began working with François Papadoc Duvalier, who at first seemed to be a progressive force in Haiti. Duvalier was a medical doctor who had worked with the U.S. occupation forces when they were there until 1934. In the late 40s, there was again a rise in resistance. This was called the Workers and Peasants Movement. Duvalier gained the movement's support in the process of becoming a brutal U.S. neocolonial puppet and putting down all resistance and struggle to regain Haiti's independence under the leadership of the African working class. Duvalier set up the Tonton Macoute, which were death squads and a paramilitary force that waged constant counterinsurgency against the African working class, which was by far the majority in Haiti and still is. Duvalier welcomed Rockefeller from the U.S. and U.S. money and troops into Haiti. And the U.S. was really thrilled to have this neocolonial puppet in Duvalier. So it was a reign of terror against the African working and impoverished people of Haiti. Papadoc was succeeded by his son, Jean-Claude Duvalier, who was known as Baby Doc. But in 1986, though, the ongoing struggles of the African working class rising up just consistently, ongoing, forced Baby Doc out and the Duvalier regime and family out of Haiti, and they still live in France today. In fact, I saw that in the 1990s, Baby Doc sent a recorded statement to Haiti apologizing for what he had done and saying he wanted to come back. And of course, it was ridiculous. And the response was from African workers, yes, let him come back, but we'll put him on trial and kill him. So nevertheless, you know, this ongoing struggle has continued. Mm-hmm. In 1990, the popular leader Jean-Bertrand Aristide won 67% of the vote for president. Aristide was a priest. He was not, and he is not, a revolutionary or a socialist. He believed in capitalism, and, you know, he has some, you can make some comparisons to Toussaint Louverture, because there's a way that he gives, weight to colonialism. And like Louverture, he was kidnapped by colonialism, not once, but twice.
Which happens whenever you try to negotiate. I mean, that's like Sandino. You know, he won militarily and then was tricked into negotiation and they killed him. He's like, you can't negotiate with imperialism.
Right. And I think that Aristide has and has had a genuine concern for the masses of the people, and they are certainly his base. His base is in the Cité du Soleil, the largest African working class community in Port-au-Prince, which is the capital of Haiti. So, but he is not a revolutionary, and he is not a socialist. He's not an anti-colonial leader. And the U.S. continues to do whatever they want to do with him. In 1991, a U.S.-backed military coup forced Aristide into exile and imposed a brutal military dictatorship onto Haiti again, this time killing at least 7,000 Africans. In October 1994, in the midst of a massive uprising, the people of Haiti, then President Clinton, quote, allowed Aristide to return to Haiti. Elections were held in 1995, and Aristide and his Lavalas party won in a landslide. In 1996, elections were again held. The U.S. only let Aristide carry out his term that he would have held had he been there and not kidnapped the first time.
They made him agree to that in order to let him back in.
Right. And but the René Préval, who is currently the president, won 88% of the vote because people thought that he was the closest thing to Aristide. But it, immediately Préval began, you know, undoing everything that Aristide had tried to put into place that would be, you know, benefit the African working class, began dismantling all of that. So within that same year, 1996, Aristide started his party, the Famille Lavalas, which is the Lavalas family, and won a third of all Senate seats that year, but Préval did not recognize them. And in 1999, Préval declared presidency by decree and dismissed the majority of the Senate. And of course, he was not considered autocratic or anything like that
by the U.S.
The resistance among the people was still extremely strong. Aristide was again elected president in the year 2000 with 90% of the vote. U.S. and U.N. military forces who were there, who were already there under Préval, remained in force. And Fed, which is something that's no doubt a CIA opposition to Aristide that slandered him and built rebellions against him. In 2004, Aristide was again kidnapped by the U.S. under Bush, President Bush, triggered by a demonstration, which was probably a U.S.-backed demonstration against Aristide. They tried to do the same thing in Venezuela, and, you know, always, all around the world, they set up a so-called opposition, pay them, groom them to be neocolonialists, and use that to struggle against the people's candidate.
Well, like in Iran, they're going around handing out laptops and stuff to opposition to the government and telling them how to do a Twitter thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they built that whole opposition on
Twitter.
Built
a Twitter network. Right. I mean, you know you're dealing with a petty bourgeois opposition if the demonstration is organized by Twitter.
Under Clinton in the 2000s, Aristide was forced to agree to IMF, what they call structural adjustment programs, policies forced on Haiti under Clinton that deepened the poverty of Haiti through rice policies. Basically what they did was Haiti did have its own rice industry, farming industry, and sold rice on the world market. But in order to agree to these IMF policies forced on them, they had to agree to accept U.S. rice at a much lower price than they could sell there, so basically put their entire rice agriculture out of business and deepened, you know, just extremely deepened the poverty of the people. U.S. corporations in Haiti for years have forced the people to work in sweatshops for 50 cents a day or 60 cents a day. Famous examples of these is the Walt Disney Company making T-shirts, Mickey Mouse pajamas, and clothing. And they're manufactured by Africans in Haiti at near slave labor. Other slave labor corporations in Haiti include Seamfast Manufacturing, which produces clothes for JCPenney, Dillard's, underwear for Hanes. Also, the Nike sweatshops were there. Levi's has put its corporations there in sweatshops. Rawlings baseball equipment and baseballs are made there. So, you know, these are the conditions that Africans in Haiti have been facing for the last several hundred years. Mm-hmm. And this is the basis for the destruction that we see of the earthquake. And we know that when all throughout the 80s and the 90s and even up until today, Africans attempting to escape the terror and the poverty of Haiti imposed by the U.S. have their bodies have washed up on the shores of Florida and and the U.S., and they've come in makeshift boats and every kind of possible way to try to get to the U.S. just to make some money. And when they have reached the U.S., they've been put in detention camps in brutal conditions, in concentration camps, really, in this country, forced to, you know, to be there. And Africans are still in these detention camps today. So this is the context for the 7.0 earthquake that happened on January 12th in Haiti. And this is the result of parasitic capitalism, capitalism born on the enslavement of African people and the genocide of the indigenous people, born on neocolonialism and terror against the people on the planet Earth, just to maintain the stolen resources that benefit the white population of the U.S. and Europe. And so, it, you know, we really want to challenge other white people to look beyond just donating money to the Red Cross, which they've already said very little money goes, you know, goes to the people at all. Mm-hmm. 1 cent of each dollar given in so-called aid goes to the government of Haiti. 33 cents goes to the U.S. military presence there. So it's, you know, it's not going to change the conditions. But what we have to do is really look at the fact that Africans in Haiti and everywhere in the world have a right to their independence, have a right to control their own lives, have a right to wage a revolution and a resistance, and to be able to seize power in their own hands, to have a state that represents the interests of the African working class. Right. And we call on white people to stand in solidarity with that. Otherwise, this U.S. government is going to continue to wage war constantly, an unending war against the peoples on the planet Earth. There will never be peace. There will never be the ability for humanity to come together to solve the problems that this brutal system has created. So, you know, we want to call on people from the white community here and in Europe and South Africa, wherever white people have gone, to be able to be part of stealing the loot of African and oppressed peoples around the world, to join the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, to become a member. It's $25 a year. Stand on the side of liberation and justice and on the forward side of history. We have a campaign going on called Africa's Resources and African Hands Solidarity Action Network. You can participate along with yoga studios who've already given free classes and been part of our Yoga with a Purpose Week. You can participate along with environmentalists who've been part of our Solidarity Earth Day program that we have in Philadelphia and we'll be having in other parts of the country this year. You can participate in raising resources for a recording studio and kitchen here at the Uhuru House to build economic development for African workers and be part of history on the side of the people. And it's a very powerful thing to do. So we want to call on white people to join us, join Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and visit our website, www.apscuhuru.org. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Thank you, African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess. This has been a really informative and important program on Solidarity, Not Charity, and we hope you'll join us next week where we're going to continue with this discussion of Haiti. We're going to get into more about what is happening there currently, and also want to encourage you to stay tuned for a Diasporic Music, a new program here on Uhuru Radio, hosted by Norman Otis Richmond out of Toronto. Uhuru.